and welcome to Worlds Apart. Almost 40 years ago, when the United States and the Soviet Union were openly pursuing a doctrine of mutually assured destruction, English singer Sting composed his now legendary hit about the Russians, who hopefully love their children too. A few months ago, the American nuclear doctrine was extended to include not only Russia, but also China and North Korea. What does it mean in practical terms, and is it still a given that we share the same biology, regardless of ideology? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Ted Postol, Professor Emeritus of Science, Technology, and National Security Policy at MIT, and former Scientific Advisor to the U.S. Chief of Naval Operations. Professor Postol, it's great to have you on the show. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I think that discussion between Russians and Chinese and Americans is a very good thing to be doing. And I'm very upset as an American citizen, I should say, that the United States is not talking to Russia and China about these important issues.
Well, let's have this discussion between the two of us. I know that you're very concerned about an accidental nuclear war between Russia and the United States. And let's admit the fraught history between our countries has known quite a few examples of technical malfunctions, which made that risk very high. But during the Cold War, both the leadership of the two countries and oftentimes the commanders on the ground were sane enough to think twice and not to rush into the confrontation. If something like this were to happen today, some sort of a technical glitch, do you think the response would be the same?
Well, I think that the possibilities are more and more serious in terms of the dangers. There are two aspects to this situation. One is, of course, the technical capabilities and limitations of each of the, let me focus on Russia and the United States, of each side. And the other has to do with the behavior of the leadership and, of course, the military organizations that are supposed to be following the orders of the leadership on both sides. I've had a very considerable experience speaking with the Russians on this. And I want to start out by saying that I have great confidence in the sobriety and the professionalism of both the Russian military and the Russian political leadership. This is not a partisan thing I'm saying. I'm saying this as an analyst, because I have watched and I've had interactions with the American political leadership, and I am very worried that the American political leadership has almost no idea what it's doing. And because of the what I would call reckless and uninformed behavior of the American political leadership, I think there is a greater danger of a serious accident.
In your articles, you indeed often lament the lack of understanding of nuclear issues at the top of the U.S. government. And I want to clarify here, is it a lack of understanding or deliberate neglect of that understanding?
The American political system requires that any individual who hopes to be part of the system itself, of the decision-making apparatus, think in a certain way and agree with limited ideas and ignorant ideas in order to be acceptable as a member of the so-called team. Mm-hmm. And it's been a process that's been going on for a very long time. And the process has filtered out anybody who has any chance of being independent in their thinking. And the ignorance of these people is, for me at least, astounding.
You know, there could be any requirements you want placed onto, you know, American officials, vocal or implicit, but there is a reality on the ground. And nuclear warheads, at the end of the day, are a military hardware. I mean, they have certain material reality to it that doesn't actually, you know, depend on some preferred view. I mean, it's just what it is. And I think Russia's military doctrine states in pretty direct terms that if Russia were to start losing in a conventional war, it intends to use tactical nuclear weapons first, and then if its survival as a nation is threatened, it has strategic nuclear weapons to rely on. And Moscow has been backing that pledge with an active, practical effort to upgrade its nuclear arsenal. So what is there that the U.S. leadership or U.S. officials are failing to understand or perhaps accept about Russia's stance? Because again, they may believe in whatever they want, but it doesn't change the reality on the ground here in Russia.
Well, the reality on the ground, I agree completely with your assessment of the reality on the ground. The question is whether American leadership understands the reality on the ground. So it's not simply a problem of whether or not they understand whether they understand the reality. The question is whether they know what they're doing, and could they do things that would inadvertently cause an accident. Now, in the case of Russia, Russia has worked very hard. Vladimir Putin has done a great deal to improve Russia's early warning capabilities. Unfortunately, and I do think it's extremely unfortunate, there are certain technical limitations that Russia happens to have at this time with regard to its satellite early warning systems. And because of those limitations, which I believe can be solved, and I'm hopeful will be solved, but given those limitations now, it could easily result in a mistake from the Russian side where it looks like where they cannot tell if they are under attack or not, and they take action based on their lack of understanding. Now, I want to underscore that the Russians have shown, particularly the Russian military, has shown a tremendous high level of professionalism with regard to this danger.
What I wanted to ask you specifically was the American leadership stance, because you argued before that it's not really tracking the reality, and yet I think there are some indications that American scientists and American officials are keeping their tabs closely on the topic. And that according to the New York Times, early this year, President Biden has signed a new adopted deterrence strategy for the United States that is supposed to include not only Russia, but also China and North Korea. And I want to ask you, what do you think it means in practical terms, this ability to fight not just one, but supposedly three nuclear wars simultaneously? Does the United States have the capacity to do that, both political and perhaps technological as well?
Well, it has the capacity to try to do it, but if it tries to, it's essentially going to result in the end of the modern world as we know it, and quite possibly the end of human life on the planet. I mean, we don't know the full consequences of a large scale nuclear war, but there's certainly no chance at all that the United States can achieve a goal of disarming China and Russia with our nuclear forces. There's no chance at all. But the mythology, the poor understanding that leads to this kind of fiction is a great danger, because if they start something, there's no question in my mind that the Russians and Chinese will be left no choice but to respond. And it doesn't matter that it would be absolutely delusional, recklessly delusional, to attack China and Russia with nuclear weapons. What matters is if it starts, there's going to be no way of stopping it. No one is going to be able to stop it. So the real big problem is the misperception of leaders and their lack of knowledge that makes them think that they might be able to, in one way or another, disarm or in some meaningful way, reduce the strike power of Russia and China by attacking their forces first.
I think one of the factors that may be fueling this mythology or misconception is all this writing that I see in Western media about a new super fuse that the United States has been fitting onto all its strategic ballistic missiles. And it is presented as something that vastly improves U.S. Nuclear firepower, that gives the United States a substantial preemptive strike capacity. And I want to ask you, as a specialist, is it enough for the United States to claim full nuclear superiority? And I mean, not only in starting the war, but also in, you know, proceeding with it and winning it ultimately.
Well, first of all, this superfuse issue is a very important issue. It actually became public because of work I did and published initially. And that work had to do with me analyzing patents that were taken out by the U.S. Navy, and then looking at the military improvements in strike capability that resulted when, you know, if the patents were executed properly. This program was so secret that it was hidden from the Congress itself. Members of the Congress had no idea what this program was doing. And the program was misrepresented to the American Congress as improving reliability. But it was, in fact, improving the strike capability of the United States forces. And what it does, it allows the U.S. to use a lower yield nuclear warhead, a 100 kiloton nuclear warhead that is in very large numbers on U.S. submarine forces to destroy Russian and Chinese ballistic missiles that are in protected underground silos. It improves, in effect, it improves the accuracy of delivery in a way that substantially increases the likelihood that a single warhead could destroy a missile in its silo. Because it improves the ability to do that for a single warhead, then two warheads are not needed, one on top of another, to do the same job that one warhead can do. Now, that has tremendous implications because it now means that a very large number of warheads that would otherwise be used to double attack silos are now free for attacks on other targets. In other words, the striking capability of the American forces is doubled or tripled with regard to those particular warheads.
Now, Professor,
it also means...
I'm sorry for interjecting here. We have to take a very short break, but I promise to come back to this very important issue in a few moments. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Ted Postol, Professor Emeritus of Science, Technology and National Security Policy at MIT and former scientific advisor to the U.S. Chief of Naval Operations. Professor Postol, before the break, you mentioned this substantial increase in the U.S. striking capability. And I think you know better than anyone else that other countries are also not sitting idly. The Russians, for example, have recently revealed the existence of the so-called ultimate doomsday weapon, the Poseidon robot submarine with quite powerful striking capabilities too. Do you think that announcement will cool down the hotheads in Washington, or is it more likely to have an opposite effect of making them even more belligerent?
Well, I'm hopeful that this weapon that was introduced, this undersea robot that was introduced, will sober American political leaders. I have done everything I can to use what little public exposure, public opportunities I have to speak, to describe this weapon and its consequences. And what the average American does not understand, and I have worked hard to help them understand this, is that this weapon could potentially carry a 100 megaton nuclear warhead. I mean, an enormous nuclear warhead. And the Russians have demonstrated in 1961 a 50 megaton warhead. This was detonated on the Novaya Zemlya in 1961. And that warhead could have easily been twice the yield if the Russians chose to make certain simple and straightforward modifications. If you look at this Poseidon, what we call the Poseidon underwater robot, it has the volume in it to house a 100 megaton warhead. Now, what I try to explain to Americans is that if that warhead were to detonate in the harbor of a U.S. city, it would destroy an area out to 70 or 80 kilometers from the actual detonation point. The reason for that is the blast wave is not as important as the super hot fireball. It's like bringing a piece of the surface of the sun down to the earth and letting it give off its energy for an instant of time. The light and heat from the detonation point is so enormous that it will set fire to things at enormous range.
And Professor, as far as I understand, and I'm certainly not an expert, but this is just one example of technology that Russia is developing. But on top of that, Russia is openly coordinating its military policy with China. And earlier this year, President Putin traveled to North Korea, where he made a statement, a pretty ambiguously worded statement, but that nevertheless states that the two countries are going to support each other in the event of a nuclear attack. Now, it was specifically worded not to presume automatic involvement of either Russia or North Korea, but I think that indicates that these three countries that have been singled out by the United States as nuclear enemies are now coordinating among themselves. What does it mean for the United States? And what's the logic, I don't understand, of having, instead of one enemy, one powerful enemy as it was during the Cold War, the United States is now seem to be pursuing three enemies or three adversaries at the same time? What's the point?
Well, American policy has been totally incompetent. I would say not only unrealistic, incompetent. If we have turned Russia into an enemy that we did not have. I was deeply involved with Russian scientists who were very, very deeply interested in working cooperatively. But what happened is American policy treated Russia as an enemy, even when Russia was in a state of exhaustion, which it was at the time in 1990. Then, of course, we reneged on an agreement with Gorbachev to not expand NATO eastward. You can find a lot of false scholarship, fraudulent scholarship in the United States, claiming that that agreement was never made. But anybody who looks at the facts knows for absolutely certainly that that agreement was made. And the Russian political leadership, not just Putin, I want to be clear, the American rhetoric, Mr. Putin is an animal who would kill anybody and do anything. And I mean, it's remarkable that he has been demonized to the point that he has in the American discussion. I mean, it's impossible to believe that people can be so stupid and so gullible to believe these things. All they have to do is look at how Mr. Putin has behaved and made decisions. In fact, I am not as afraid. I am afraid of a nuclear accident that leads to an uncontrolled exchange between Russia and the United States. But I am much more confident that it would be less likely to happen because of the extremely sober and careful leadership of Mr. Putin on this issue.
As you perhaps know, the Russian nuclear doctrine is now being revised, and there is a lot of lobbying efforts going on here in Moscow from the hardliners, pressing Mr. Putin, the Russian president, to how they phrase it is to introduce fear back into the bilateral relations between the two countries. The argument is that nuclear deterrent is no longer deterring Americans, and many hardliners in Moscow claim exactly what you said, that the American leadership has become totally reckless, and in order for it to actually see the reality, it needs to be scared. It needs to be in touch with its own fear. And the only way of doing that is to make sure that the American leadership believes that Russia can actually use its nuclear arsenal. What do you think about this idea? Because on the one hand, you know, fear helps us survive. But on the other hand, it's sort of, it looks like even the Russians, at least some part of the Russian establishment, scientific and military establishment, are now pushing President Putin towards taking a far more hardline stance on those issues.
I don't agree with that argument that these people are making. I think all they will do by following that argument is they will lower the threshold towards an accident. So I think that President Putin's strategy, which is to be firm and to make it clear that a nuclear war will result in everybody's destruction and that he doesn't want to do it. He's been very, very clear about that. And he's also been very clear that if he is attacked, if Russia is attacked, he will respond and the destruction of the entire world will occur. He's been absolutely clear about that. He's been he's expanded his discussion to make it clear that he understands it would be the destruction of the world. He's made it clear that he does not want to see that happen, but he's also made it clear that he will respond if he has to. Mm-hmm. So that to me is enough. And you know, if the people in political decision-making positions in the United States don't understand that, then we will all be dead.
Professor Postol, I want to mention that one of the things I find most remarkable about your advocacy is that you actually petitioned the U.S. government to share with Russia certain technology, for example, in the domain of early warning system, specifically to make Russia less anxious and therefore less likely to respond irresponsibly to any type of malfunction or perhaps fear of attacks. But you also mentioned in your writing that the United States has its insecurities too. For example, it has little to no capacity to intercept any ballistic missiles. And you said that it could be vulnerable to a balloon carrying a nuclear warhead. And I think what that underscores is that both sides, both countries, as well as other countries like China and North Korea, perhaps are better off trying to, you know, settle their rivalries in a diplomatic and negotiated way, because you can never fully insulate a country from all types of threats, no matter how, you know, big or how powerful that country is. Why do you think that route is no longer pursued? Like the route that you actually contributed a lot to, both during the Cold War and later on when you worked on disarmament and stuff like that?
Well, the problem is related to what I brought up earlier, that the American political establishment has cleaned out anybody with real expertise and knowledge from the decision-making apparatus. If you look at this Anthony Blinken, it's hard for me to believe he lives on the same planet when he starts talking. So there needs to be a change in the way political thinking and the way we select our people in advisory roles. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I think President Putin has done a very good thing with this underwater world-ending weapon that has this tremendous nuclear warhead on it, because even an idiot, even a total idiot, would understand that missile defenses cannot do anything about this weapon. So I don't think it was an accident that there was a decision by the Russian leadership to deploy such a weapon. The weapon was deployed so that even an idiot who believes missile defense has some capability, and it has none, and that's another discussion, but he just wanted to make it clear to anybody that even Mr. Biden, even Mr. Blinken, even Mr. Sullivan, that it doesn't matter that you have missile defenses, because even if they work, everyone in your country is going to die, and we're all going to die. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you cannot stop that as a consequence of an attack on Russia. And I think, I don't like that a weapon like this has been produced, but I think it's a sensible choice for the Russians to do. And it actually is, in a strange way, good for American political leadership, because it sobers the political leadership up with regard to thinking they can get away with anything. And that's the big problem, because once something starts, it will be unstoppable. That's the big problem.
Well, Professor Postol, we have to leave it there, but let me thank you for being with us today and sharing your expertise with our audience.
It's my pleasure, and I wish there were more discussion of this kind between Americans and Russians, and in particular, the Americans would take a little bit more initiative to do this, to have these kinds of discussions. So thank you very much.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.